I want to encourage you this week that I think the Lord has some things specifically to speak into your hearts and into your lives. And if you're somebody who has made a decision where you've said, yes, I want to follow Jesus, I believe that what we're going to look at today will be a real encouragement to you. And if you're somebody who's not made that commitment to follow Christ, I think that you will still be encouraged and you'll get a better picture of what it looks like to be somebody who's just saying yes to following Christ. And so I want to start with a question. You don't have to answer this out loud or put your hand up or anything, but I just want to ask, in the last 2 months, so I'm only narrowing this down to the last 2 months, not talking about your whole life. Probably if the whole life was a part of this question, all of us would say yes. But in the last 2 months, have you felt like giving up in any way? Or have you felt like throwing in the towel, or just you're being overwhelmed with whatever it is, and it just feels like it's too much? And just think about that in the last couple months, or you know, some situations that you've faced and some difficulties, some challenges. Because I think that probably for most of us, we have faced some difficulties and challenges in our lives that have just made us go like, I don't even know if I can continue. Last week, at the end of the service, I shared, and I didn't share it in the 9 o'clock, but I shared it in this service in the 11, just about how these last couple months, specifically for here at TC, and if you're tuning in online, maybe it's something going on kind of in a broader way, not just related to Thunder Bay or at TC, but in the last few months, there's been more challenging situations that have come up in your lives than I remember in the last few years. And I do think that if you look at what's going on in Canada, you look at what's going on in the world, that there are a lot of people facing incredible difficulties and incredible challenges. And the temptation to just give up is a reality for a lot of people. And so what I want to share from God's word today is that what God's desire for us is that we continue on, that we persist, that we overcome, that we don't give up. And I really believe that he's got some things to say to us that'll be a real encouragement. And so I want to open with an illustration that'll kind of make things make sense to you. And you can put your hands up for this. I'd be curious to know, because we're getting up into the Christmas season. But how many people have seen the movie It's a Wonderful Life? Anybody? Okay, most people. That movie was made in 1946. How many people were around when, I'm just joking, when that was made? Do you remember seeing it the year it came out? Anybody remember seeing it the year it came out? So It's a Wonderful Life is a really powerful story, and I'll just kind of recap it. So if you're not familiar with it, I'll just give it a little bit of a summary so that you understand why I'm using it as an example. But in the movie, It's a Wonderful Life, it's about a guy who has a family. He's got a bunch of kids. He's married, and he works in this town, and he's an important person in the town. He helps people that can't afford to get mortgages and help them start businesses, and basically he's given his life to helping the average common person. And he reaches a point in his life where he's so discouraged, he's suicidal. So when we meet him in the movie, he wants to throw himself off a bridge, and he's just done with life. And God sends an angel to talk to him. And the angel is kind of a wonky, I love the guy that plays the angel. He's just the silly, wonky kind of a guy. And so anyways, he sends this angel who has to convince him that he's an angel, and it's just, you know, kind of funny. But basically what he does is he shows the main character in the movie what his town and what his family would look like if he was just didn't exist. And so if you remember the movie, he's got all these scenes where he's interacting with he sees his wife because he can't talk to them, and he's interacting with the town. He's seeing all these horrible things that are going on. And what the angel is trying to show him is this is what would be happening if you were just removed from the picture. And then the angel restores him back to reality, and he comes running down the stairs, and no time has passed. But he comes down the stairs, and all of a sudden he just picks up his kids, and he loves his kids, and he's kissing his wife, and he's so excited about this job that he just hated seconds ago and wanted to give up, wanted to throw himself off a bridge. He loves it, and he's excited, and he's pumped, and he's just ready to go for it. And the reason I'm telling that story is because I think it's kind of it's a picture. And the reason that movie, I think, is still so popular today is because it speaks to a lot of us. A lot of us watch that and we're encouraged because we can relate with the feeling that is being shown in the movie with this guy that's so discouraged he just wants to give up, right? And the thing about our lives right now is that for most of us, and maybe you've had this experience, I don't know, But for most of us, we don't get to meet the angel that shows us what life would look like if we weren't involved, okay? And maybe you're there and you're like, I don't know about you, but that's happened to me like four times. I don't know. But for most of us, we don't, right? But we've all dealt with that same kind of just discouragement and just the feelings of wanting to quit and to give up. And we, as in the last couple of weeks, we've been working through the book of Hebrews, and I've pointed out that the book of Hebrews was written to a group of people who were faced with incredible challenges. And so the Christians that were alive during the time when Hebrews was being read aloud were Christians that were literally facing the most intense persecution you can imagine. They were being, some of them were being thrown into arenas where there were hungry lions that were going to kill them. Some of them were being sawn in two. The book of Hebrews talks about that. And all they had to do to avoid that kind of a death was to say, well, I walk away from Jesus. I deny him. And the author in the book of Hebrews is saying, don't give up. Even in the face of that kind of persecution, even in the face of that kind of difficulty and trial and challenge, just don't give up. Just hold on. And I don't know about you, but when I read that, I find that quite convicting, because for me personally, I have faced some times in my life where I have felt like giving up. And I've faced darkness to the point where I just, like, it's so hard to persist and to continue. And then I think about some of the situations these people were facing. I'm like, oh my goodness, like, I've never seen anything like that here in Canada in my lifetime. And the message is the same. You know, to us and to these people, don't give up. And I want to really look at why. And so I'm going to read, and our section this week that we were looking at was Hebrews 12 and 13, and then James 1, 2, and 3. And I'm going to read a couple verses from James, and then a few verses in Hebrews chapter 12. And this will be up on the screen. Oh, and before I do, this is the summary, so that you just get an idea of where we're headed. The whole, if you don't remember anything else, this is where we're headed. The sermon in two sentences: don't give up, run the race with your eyes on Jesus, and do it with joy. So what I really want to highlight today is run the race, eyes on Jesus, and do it with joy. And that's the message that I believe God has for us right now. And so James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4 says, "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy." I'm going to read verse 3 in a second, but I just want to pause there. When troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. Is that something that comes naturally to us? And it's really interesting how he says this here, because he doesn't just say, when troubles come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. I think if he did, then what you and I would probably do is we would face some sort of trouble, some sort of difficulty, and think, oh, he's not talking about that. But he clarifies here in James, he's saying, when troubles of any kind come your way, whatever you face, whatever difficulty, whatever challenge you go through, no matter how bad it is, no matter how much you feel like giving up, consider it an opportunity for joy. Like, it's a really foreign way to think. Like, when you and I face troubles and difficulties and we feel overwhelmed, we don't think, like, what an opportunity for joy, right? Like, this is so good, right? Like, we are not, like, that's just not how we naturally think. But what he's trying to tell us here is he's saying, you actually can. You can get to the point where you have this joy. And joy, it's like, it becomes the background music for our lives. It's not something that we fake. It's not happiness. You know, I think a lot of times, especially in the church, there's this feeling of like, well, I've got to make it look like things are going well, or make it look like things are okay, and put a smile on, and it's fake. The scriptures are full of people that lamented and were filled with grief and difficulty, and they released that to God, and because of knowing who Jesus is, and that's what we're going to get to, you can live in a state of just joy. And that's what he's saying here. Like, you can actually face a trial, and think about the worst trial you can think of. You know, whether it's a death of a loved one, or whether it's the loss of a job, or whether it's, you know, somebody that you care about that's involved in a situation that is just really, really difficult and you feel like you've lost control. Like, there is a way to walk through that with joy. Not a joy where it's like an apathy, where it's like, well, I don't really care. I'm just going to be happy and enjoy me. I'll do me. Like, it's this joy that, like, God is going to work in me through this. And that's what he's saying, which is kind of counterintuitive for most of us. And so in verse 3, he says, "For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. For when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete, needing nothing." when your endurance, like this is a pretty powerful thing that he's saying here. When you get to the point where your endurance is fully developed, he says you're perfect. That's one of the things that I believe is one of the biggest struggles for us just as human beings, is having endurance. You know, we can all start a race. We can all start on a journey. But the having the wherewithal to make it through all the way to the end and finish well and finish strong is not something that comes natural. But we'll see that in Christ, we can do that. And then skip down to verse 12. This will be up on the screen. It says, God blesses those who patiently endure testing and temptation. Afterward, they will receive the crown of life that God has promised to those who love him. He blesses those that patiently endure testing and temptation. I'll bet you that most of us, if we're honest, would say, I don't endure testing with patience, right? Like even in simple things, even if you drive a car, you probably don't endure the test of some driver in front of you with patience, right? Like that's me. You guys are all looking at me like, I do, obviously, right? So that's one thing I wrestle with that. And so he's talking about like major testing, major difficulty in it, and being able to endure that with patience. And God gives this crown of life to those that do that. And then he's going to show us what that actually looks like. If you go back to Hebrews chapter 12, I'm going to read verses 1 through 4. And this is coming off of, just so you know, he's going to reference this cloud of witnesses. And so Hebrews 11, which we referenced in the last week or two, is like the hall of faith, it's called by a lot of people. And so it's just a big list of a whole bunch of people that followed God and had faith in him. And the encouraging thing about that list is a lot of them were very imperfect, but they trusted God and he blessed them incredibly, even though they didn't deserve it. And so he's referencing this this cloud of witnesses, these great men and women of faith that have gone before us. So starting in verse 1, he says, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a huge crowd of witnesses to the life of faith, let us strip off every weight that slows us down, especially the sin that so easily trips us up. And let us run with endurance the race that God has set before us. We do this by keeping our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. And so that's a key, okay? And I'm going to highlight that in a minute. But he's saying the way that we run with endurance, the way that we continue, the way that we persist, the way that we overcome is by setting our eyes on Jesus, the champion who initiates and perfects our faith. He is our motivation. There is no motivation greater than Jesus himself. Because of, and this is a powerful revelation of Jesus. He says, because of the joy awaiting him, he endured the cross, disregarding its shame. Now he's seated at the place of honor beside God's throne. Think of all the hostility he endured from sinful people. Then you won't become weary and give up. After all, you've not given your lives in your struggle against sin. And so the writer of Hebrews here, he's saying like Jesus, because of the joy he had in God, he actually endured the cross. And so he endured like open shame. He endured being stabbed in the back by closest friends. He endured having people bold-faced lie about him, that, you know, telling things that were completely untrue, and he was brutally beaten. But he went that direction in obedience to God. But he had this underlying sense of joy, which didn't mean that he was happy. It's not like he was like, hey, this is great, this is awesome. But he had this underlying joy because he knew that the creator of the universe was at work in the midst of all of this chaos, all of this evil, all of these horrible circumstances. He trusted God. And what the scriptures, what God is saying to you and I today is that we can have the same trust in him because of Jesus. And so the three things I just want to highlight are run the race, eyes on Jesus, and don't give up. No, it wasn't don't give up. It was do it with joy. Run the race, eyes on Jesus, and run with joy. And so the first one, run the race, I really wanted to point this out because it says here in Hebrews, the first few verses of Hebrews 12, you know, to run this race. You can't run a race if you don't know that you're in one. So, and I like watching athletes and people do, you know, incredible things with their bodies that I'm like, how did they get to this point? There's never been an Olympic athlete that's running a race or, you know, doing the cross-country ski that was in one of those races and didn't know they were in it. Never. Like, you don't just end up in the Olympics, right? You don't just end up strapping on a pair of skis one day and you're running along and you see all these people in, like, tights and you're like, oh, I guess I'm in the Olympics, right? Like, you don't run the race unless you know you're in one. And what the author of Hebrews here, this was written 2,000 years ago, and he was talking to people that at the time there were these Greek games that went on. And at the time that this was being written, there was something called the Greek foot race. And it was like the most difficult, challenging race in its time. And what he was saying, when he was trying to draw the attention of his original hearers to, was like, these people ran their race. They knew they were in a race, and they ran it with intention. And the question I want to ask today is, do you know that you're in a race? Like, do you have this conviction that you're in a race? And that conviction comes with this, like, and the question, like, to drive it a little bit deeper is, like, would you be able to say what your calling is, what your purpose is? Like, if somebody asked you, what is your purpose? What is it that you know that you're called from God to do? Like, what is it that, like, would you be able to say what that is? Like, do you know that you're in a race? One of the things that I see a lot when I'm watching popular movies or listening to popular music or just out and about, it just seems like in our current culture and in the way that we kind of go about life, that we're just trying to exist. Like, we're just trying to get enough food. We're trying to enjoy our family and do what we're supposed to do to take care of our family. We're trying to enjoy life and get vacations and whatever. We just go about life. We just exist. But it's like, I would argue that most people probably don't realize that they're in a race or that there's a calling on their life. And what I want to say to you today is that there actually is a calling on your life, a calling that God specifically has put on you. Like, he actually has a desire for your life. There is a race. Like, you are in a race, and there's things we can be a part of and involved in this life that actually fulfill that calling. And the calling gets fulfilled. Like, I'm a dad. I believe part of the calling that God has in my life is to really love my kids and point them to Jesus the best way that I can. I'm a husband. I'm supposed to love my wife, Vicky, the way that Jesus loves the church. If she's watching, I love you, Vicky. You're awesome. And she's probably mad that I'm saying this on camera, but I love you anyway. But that's a part of the calling, right? The people, the relationships God has put us with and in, that's a part of our calling. But even bigger than that, like, God actually has a purpose and a calling for our lives. And I want to point this out, and I've highlighted this a lot in the last few years, and it's something that I'll continue to highlight because I think that it's important for us to understand this, that the calling God has placed on your life is greater than even the relationships and the place that you're in right now. And what I mean by that is if our purpose for life, if we think that our whole purpose is like our marriage or our children or our job, our career, our success, well, if that thing gets taken away from us, we're lost. And that happens all the time. People that go through major crisis in their lives, a lot of times what happens is they lose either a person or their family or something that they're involved in, their career. And they just, like, they're spinning. They're like, I don't know what the purpose of my life is. The reason why Christians, and like the emphasis that we place on Jesus is so high, is because Jesus is eternal. Like, he is always faithful. So even if you lose your family, even if you lose your job, even if you, like, everything in this world that you kind of hold as dear, if that gets taken away, if you're a follower of Christ, you're still on solid ground because he will never fail. But if your hope is in anything other than Jesus, then that can be taken from you, and you're left like the guy in It's a Wonderful Life who just wants to jump off a bridge because he thought his purpose was wrapped up in whether or not he was successful in this business or whether he was successful with his family. When he felt like that was gone, he just wanted to throw himself off a bridge. But the reason why it's so vital as Christians to connect with Jesus and have our relationship in him is because when we do, he's eternal. He's faithful. That can't be taken away like other things in our life can be taken away. This I've put this up on the screen before, but the Westminster Catechism, which was basically a group of very spiritual people who tried to figure out what the purpose of life is, they came up with this one sentence. They said, man's chief end or man's purpose, man's the reason we're here, is to glorify God and enjoy him forever. Like, your calling. And so I can answer in a general sense what your calling is. Like, I believe every single person who's here today sitting in a chair, whether you're a follower of Jesus or not, I believe that the calling on your life is to glorify God, which just means to live in such a way that it glorifies him. Like, you fulfill your purpose. right? When a bird flies through the sky and picks up food and makes a nest, it glorifies God. It does what it was intended for. When you and I live the way that God intended for us to live, it glorifies Him. So our purpose, in a general way, is to glorify God and then to enjoy Him forever. So enjoying God is a big part of it. Like, some people are so serious about their Christianity and their walk that it's just kind of boring and lame. And I believe we are called to enjoy God. We are called to enjoy each other, that there is a way to walk through this life with joy. But the purpose side of it, I can't answer specifically for each person here what purpose for you looks like. And a couple things, and I don't know what the Lord's stirring in your heart, but I would encourage you to, like, listen to how the Lord might be leading you to step out of what has kind of become your norm. And so maybe for some of you, purpose would mean being more involved in church community and eventually maybe leading something like a life group, maybe leading something like a prayer group. Or even better, I think, you know, it's really great when we, you know, develop community here and we lead life groups and we gather for worship and people step up into positions of leadership. Like, that's all cool. But maybe God's calling you in some way to be an influence with your family who none of them know Jesus. Or maybe you work at a job where you're around people all the time and that don't know Jesus. And in some way, God wants you there to be an influence for Him, to start maybe like an alpha group or like something that points people to Christ. Like, your purpose is greater than you realize. And we get lost sometimes just in the mundane and the normal, and we've got to eat and we got to sleep and we got to do, and we just get lost and we lose this, like, sense of call, the sense of purpose. And the writer of Hebrews, he's saying, you, like, run the race. Like, God has set a race before you. Like, the purpose that God has for each of us is that we would glorify God, that we would live in such a way that it brings glory to God. It could be involved in some way in leading a ministry to orphans and widows. I think some of the, and I love when churches have incredible ministries, but I think that it's really, really vital that people that are followers of Jesus are involved in ministries outside of these walls, right? And so maybe at some point God calls you to be involved in helping in some other place where there's great need, and you can influence others towards Christ in that way. Like, you have a calling on your life, and there is a way that God wants to use you to just bring glory to Him. And what the author of Hebrews is saying, like, realize that you're in a race. Like, you're in a race. Run the race. Like, fight. Move forward. Go for it. Don't give up. This picture was super popular when I was younger. I think almost every pastor's office I went into, I saw it. I sent it out. It was in the email. If you're not on our email list and you want to be, you can sign up for that on the website or let me know. But I sent this out in our Friday, our weekly email. I love the picture of this because I think all of us can relate with the feeling that the frog has, except that a lot of us are not holding on to the neck. We're just like, you know what? Just swallow me. Okay? You know what comes to mind? I remember one time, I've said this before to people, that the closest I've ever felt to just not wanting to live was the first day I went out lobster fishing, and I threw up like 25 times, like just all day long. I was so sick, and I remember leaning over just thinking, it's not so bad if I fell in. Like, I would just be, the pain would be over. It would be done. I kind of felt like the frog without holding the neck. But the frog here, like, the reason I like this image so much is because I think all of us can relate with that feeling of, like, I'm done. Like, I just feel absolutely done or overwhelmed, or like the circumstances are too much. And the image that is being painted for us here in Hebrews is what he's telling us is, like, be like that frog. Like, he's in there and he's holding on to the neck of that seagull and he's like, nope, you will not swallow me. I am not giving up. And so run the race. And to run the race, we have to realize we're in one. And the second thing, and the motivation, and this is really key, and I believe this is where the Lord really wants to speak some things into our heart. In verse 3 of Hebrews 12, it says this. It says, think, other translations use the word consider, think or consider all of the hostility he, Jesus, endured from sinful people. Then you won't become weary and give up. So that word, think or consider, and there's a few other words that are used in the English language, that word comes from a Greek word that this is the only place in the Bible this word is used. And it's used intentionally. It was actually a mathematical term. So what he's saying here, think about Jesus who endured such hostility. It was a mathematical term that was usually used in some way to do with mathematics or solving something really difficult or puzzling. And so what the word he was using intentionally was saying, like, investigate, think about, look into Jesus in the same way that you'd try to figure out some complicated math problem or some complex issue where you would really investigate and spend all kinds of time and energy trying to figure this out. Like, do the same thing for Jesus. And the reason why is because everything I just said when it comes to running the race and don't give up, like, that can be discouraging in some way. Some of us face incredible difficulties. And I can just tell you, there's been times where I've sat with people and had conversations with people that are in the middle of grief where I just felt absolutely powerless, where I've gone home and just wept and cried out to God and been like, it made me feel powerless when I've sat with some of the situations that are so filled with despair and so filled with just lostness. And it's just like a message like, well, just don't give up, have joy. It almost seems discouraging. It's like, yeah, well, you don't even know. And what the author of the book of Hebrews here, and this is inspired by the Holy Spirit, what God is saying to us, and this is so key, is he's saying, like, look at Jesus. Like, when you feel discouraged, when you feel down, when you feel like you've lost everything there is to lose, when you feel like it's just absolutely overwhelming and there's nothing left to hold on to, that's when you need to look at Jesus. And not just like a, oh yeah, I know Jesus existed, but like actually dig in, investigate, because if you connect with Jesus, if you realize who he is and what he's done, it'll give you the motivation that you need to persist and to continue like nothing else. And if you haven't connected with that, what I would encourage you to do is continue looking into Jesus. Some of my favorite stories of great men and women of God are people that have gone through things that it doesn't even make sense to me that they've been able to overcome or pull through. But because of their faith in Jesus, God has given them the strength to persist, to continue. And there's been this underlying joy. But it's because of a relationship with Christ. So everything I'm saying about persisting and going forward and moving on, like, if you don't have a relationship with Christ, that's just pie in the sky. It's just self-help. It's just motivational. And in a time of darkness, it's not going to do anything. But if you have a relationship with Christ, the motivation is more than any motivation you'll ever have. We've seen examples, and I'll share a story. Motivation is really key. And so if you are into sports or you're into, you know, whatever it is that you see people doing great things, we're really drawn in by stories. Like when you hear somebody's story, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I want them to get it. I want them to win. I like watching shows with my kids like Ultimate Beast Warrior or Ninja. Malachi, if he's listening, is going to be like, you got that wrong, Dad. But sometimes in those shows, what they do is they tell a person's story and they, like, how they beat the odds or what they're overcoming or how they've lost somebody important to them and they've just gone on and your heart just cries out. You're like, oh, I want them to make it. There was this, it was just filmed in 2019. It's called The World's Toughest Race, and it's called an eco challenge, and these eco challenges have been going on for like 30 years or something. And this one that was filmed in 2019, it was filmed in Fiji. And it was an insane race. It was a 10-day race, and every team that entered had to enter with four people, and it had to be a mixed-gendered team, and there had to be four people going through this race, and there was a starting point, and they had all these insane obstacles that they had to get through, and it was all through the island of Fiji, all over the place, and I just was so drawn into the show, because some of these people would literally sleep for like 1 hour a night. And the elite teams, the best of the best, they finished this race in like 6 days. And some of them had like 6 hours of sleep at the end of 6 days. How they did it was just unbelievable. Well, one of the teams their motivation is what rocked me. So there was a young guy, he was probably in his mid-20s, and he would have been like an elite racer. Like he could have been on the top team that finished first place, like just would have been so elite. And his dad was in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's and was really showing the signs of having Alzheimer's. And what was so crazy about the story was that his dad, for years and years and years, was an elite eco challenge racer. So he'd done all these races, and this would have been his last one. And his son gave up an opportunity to be a part of one of the elite teams and probably win the race because he wanted to do this. It was a dream of his to be able to do this with his dad. And so I'm watching this eco challenge, and I'm almost in tears watching. And and then the other members on the team, they were there because they wanted to support this story, this father and son being able to do this together. And it was that motivation, that story was what sucked me in. It wasn't the one who got the best time. It was man, look at the relationship between this father and this son. And for all I know now, the father maybe doesn't remember his son anymore, or he's starting to lose memories of his son. But his son gave up this opportunity because he wanted to be with him. That was an incredible motivation. And what the author in the book of Hebrews is telling us, what God is speaking to us today, is he's saying, there's an even greater motivation than any motivational story you've ever heard, and his name is Jesus. He wants to have a relationship with you. If we have our motivation, and what I want to say and really drive this home is that if your motivation is in anything else other than Christ, it can be lost. If it's in a relationship here, that relationship can be taken away. We don't have control over whether or not we lose that relationship. We don't have control over our job. More now than ever, right? In the middle of COVID, don't we all realize that the economy is not really in a great place? Who knows what's going to happen 3 years from now when we have to start paying back all the money that's being given out, right? We don't know what's coming, and it's pretty shaky. You know, it can be pretty scary if you start thinking about that. So the things that kind of make us feel secure now or are our motivation now could be lost. And if that's what you're finding motivation from, then you're in a dangerous place. But if your motivation comes from this relationship with Christ, you can face death and still move on with confidence and courage and hope and joy. And that's what God is wanting to say to us. And I want to encourage you with that. What the reason why the scriptures are so real to life now is because this hasn't changed. 2,000 years, the situation's different. We don't have a Greek foot race. We have the Olympics. The language is different. It was written in Greek, and we're reading it now in English, right? There's things that have changed, but the actual message of God's relationship with humanity has not changed at all. We still face incredible difficulties. We still face incredible challenges. We still feel like giving up. And the answer that God has is the same now as it was 2,000 years ago, as he's saying, I sent my son Jesus Christ. And if you have a relationship with him, if you actually look into him and investigate what it looks like to be his follower, you'll get through anything. He becomes our motivation in a way that is absolutely powerful. Before we move on to the last part, and maybe you're here today and you're not a follower of Christ, and you're wondering hasn't God revealed himself in other ways? There's a famous German theologian who died in the 60s. He was born in the late 1800s, and he died in the 60s, and he was giving a lecture. His name is Karl Barth, and he was giving a lecture at Princeton University. And he had a young student ask him, I just got to say, too, if you look like that with those glasses, you just seem so much more epic and smart. He was a really smart guy. So he was giving lectures at Princeton, and a student came up and asked him a good question. He said, sir, don't you think that God has revealed himself in other religions and not only in Christianity? His response is so on point. He says, no, God has not revealed himself in any religion, including Christianity. He has revealed himself in his son. And he hit the nail on the head. He's saying it's not the religion, it's not what men have come up with. There's no ideology or thought process, and religions are, there's a lot of human involvement in how religions actually get carried out. Even in the way we meet today, we have a meeting and we open with a few songs and we're in, these four walls and somebody speaks, that we're worshiping God in a way that kind of makes sense to us. But the scriptures don't say this is the only way. This form of meeting together, this form of doing church is the only way. The revelation that God gave to us is Jesus Christ himself. And that's what Karl Barth was pointing out. Is he's saying, God didn't reveal himself in any man-made religion or way of doing things. He's revealed himself in Jesus. He is our motivation. A relationship with Jesus can give us the strength we need to overcome everything. He's eternal. And a relationship